Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. And this week I picked a story called The Martyr by Mary Gordon because a listener actually suggested it. So I had not read this before.
Send in your suggestions.
Yes, send in your suggestions. We sometimes run out. I certainly do. There's only so many lists. It was the height of the Ebola crisis, but it hadn't yet received the media attention it would get when the American doctor was infected and the hysteria began. So I asked the question that I know disappointed him. Do you have to go, James? You're not as young as you once were. Isn't this a job for a younger man? He just went silent for a while, and I got the sense that he was tempted to hang up on me. When he spoke, his voice was drained of warmth. It was dry and impersonal, as if he were lecturing a particularly obtuse student and doing it only out of a sense of obligation. I don't understand why you would suggest I shouldn't be going. Tens of thousands of people have already died, and we at the World Health Organization are partly to blame. We didn't respond quickly enough, and it's not like I'm the only one. Hundreds of people have volunteered, to say nothing of the African medical personnel who have been there from the beginning, risking their lives, using all their skills, day after day, for months. Compared to what they are doing, what they've done, what I'm doing is very small, and why not me? I should go precisely because I'm not young, because I've had my life, I've had my run, and it's been a pretty good one. And I have no important human attachments. There's only you, little brother, and you have so many attachments that losing me will only be a minor sorrow for you and a temporary one. That's not true, Jimmy, I said. It's just not true. I was crying, and I knew that he could tell that, even over the phone, and I knew he would dislike my breaking down. Oh, but it is, Tom, he said. You know it is. I felt hurt, chastened and hurt, as my mother had been hurt when he said he wasn't coming home for Christmas because he had no attachments. But I am attached to you, my brother, I wanted to say. And yet there was no way that I could suggest that he couldn't go because of me. The crisis was so huge, and in comparison, my need of him seemed so minor as to be unworthy even of note. I think my last words to him were, "Good luck." So, like I said, this was suggested by a listener of the podcast, and I didn't know what to expect. But first of all, reading it, like you mentioned before we started recording, John, because you don't know where it's going, and because of the way it's written, things were, at least for me, like revealed really slowly. I made a note, like on the second page, that the narrator was an adult, because at first we're kind of hearing about his brother, his older brother, and I wasn't sure if the narrator was a female or a male until halfway through the story, when they say, like, I had a wife. And even that's not definitive, right? When a story is written by a woman, sometimes I just default to the narrator being female. So it's later that they mention that his name is Tom as a nickname. And then later in the section that I read, he's definitively referred to as the younger brother. And that does or doesn't matter, except that so much of the story is about this narrator's direct comparison to his older brother.
I assumed he was a brother. They were both their brothers because of the first paragraph. James was older.
Oh, good for you, John. Good for you. Took some of us longer.
Just because of they're making a contrast between the two of them. And so it feels like a contrast of being a brother and sister seems bigger than the kinds of contrasts they're making.
Yeah,
If that makes sense.
it does.
There was a moment, though, I won't deny that there was a moment I was like, oh, am I re reading this wrong? I have been assuming it's a brother, but did I mess
Yeah.
that up? But that was like just momentary, and I don't remember when it happened.
No, it was only like when I read it, the first time, I just assumed it was a boy because of that paragraph. But then I was confused because I was like, did I make an assumption that it would be male because it's written by a woman? And then I'm like looking for this context and it's like my wife and I'm like, oh, it's gotta be a dude.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah. But that was also the moment on the second page where it says, I rented this villa in Tuscany for his wife's, their 25th anniversary. So it wasn't until the second page that I realized he's writing this in hindsight. He's summarizing something that is well past almost because so much time has passed.
You're talking about stuff that this is going to lead to my takeaway. Like, this is what I marked up, and the whole thing is like how this unfolds.
Yes.
The first paragraph is the only paragraph that's separated, and it's like establishing, like, it's telling us something happened.
And I could have prevented it or should have. And
Or maybe could have, who knows?
yeah.
And it's like the rest of it is like, let's unspool that very slowly. But yeah, I can come back to that.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's your takeaway, and that's great. And that's the whole thing of this story. That's what makes the story great, right? Like, we can't avoid talking about it now. I was just going to say that aside from how it's like narratively unfolding, it was sort of disorienting as a reader to realize, like, okay, he's an adult. Okay, this is told in hindsight. Okay, he's summarizing flashbacks. Okay, he is the younger brother. And something does happen, and we do already know that he's dead. The story's not leading up to his death. It's not leading up to the fact that he's gone. That's been given away. And we talk all the time about stories that give away the ending and still manage to be satisfying somehow, right? And this is one of those. And so, okay, the cat's out of the bag, he dies. And then we find out how he dies. And
Yeah,
it's
and then
terrible.
that's not the revelation And
either. That's not it either. The story keeps going. And it's, I would argue, not until the second time you read the story that you realize that the sections like the one that I read, which are kind of in the middle of this piece, are the ones that you need to pull out and realize are telling you the point of the story. So yeah, he dies and still that's not it. And then we get to the end, and I guess the point of the story is that this younger brother, like, this was his like most favorite person, and he died. And he feels like, based on the section that I read, and it's kind of reiterated, I would argue, at the end here, the narrator's dealing with the fact that his brother was murdered. He didn't die as a result of like actually contracting Ebola. It wasn't his actual line of work that killed him. It was like these villagers in Africa who looked at these doctors who were taking their family members away and like just assumed falsely that
Yes.
had they not been getting treated,
He was murdered because of a mistake, because it was
yeah,
just, they
they
didn't
didn't
understand.
understand. Which, like, dude, I get it. If everybody that goes to get treated for this disease dies, like, at what point do you decide that you don't want them to get treated anymore? And at what point do you blame these doctors, So he's like brutally killed.
Yeah.
And the brother is dealing with the fact that he doesn't want to remember the death. But even that doesn't feel like the takeaway. The takeaway feels like the fact that this James just felt as if he could go and do this thing and that he was an island somehow, right? Where his life's work could have rippling effects, but his death wouldn't. He's like, I have to do hard work and work that nobody wants to do and work that's hard to do and noble somehow. First, he's a priest and then he decides to go do this because I can help lots of people. Like, he firmly believes that he has to help impact tons and tons and tons of strangers.
He's trying to be a priest and a doctor, and then he picks doctor.
Yeah, and it's called the martyr for a reason. Like,
Yeah.
you can't kill a martyr because they already died for the cause. But I would argue that half the martyrs in the world give themselves that title. We all have like a parent or a friend or a teacher or a professor, like any of these people in the world, like a coworker who decides to repeatedly volunteer for the hard thing. And if they did it out of pure good intentions, they could be a martyr. Most people aren't pure and good. Most people do these hard things for the recognition. Anytime someone's like, "Don't worry, I got it," I'm like, unless you really wanted to do it, what you really want me to know is that you volunteered to do that thing and that you're a good person because of it. Well, that's a leap, in my opinion, right? So this brother, though, he's like, I'm a good person. I'm a doctor. I'm a priest. I'm gonna go do this thing. And I don't think we're arguing whether or not he's a good guy. But the younger brother is just devastated because he's like, how can you be so confident that you can impact the lives of all of these people and not understand that your death is going to be devastating to me specifically and no one else? Like, your name is a blip in a radar. It's a news article.
Yeah.
There's coworkers of yours that are going to be devastated for a little bit, but you're my only older brother. I grew up with you and I love you and I idolize you and I care about you. And for my entire life, you've been dismissive of our family. And that's fine. You can feel a certain way about your family and not have it reciprocated, right? But this brother is just like, but you do love me, don't you? He has this moment when he visits him and he sees his brother among his colleagues and they do the dishes together and it's a good visit and they're joking around about things. And the younger brother's reminded that his older brother is human, even though he's abroad doing big, exciting things. And it's intimate that way where he's like, look, only you and I can be this way with each other. Like, can't you appreciate that? The fact that I think anytime you visit like a family member when they're living somewhere new and exciting, it's like, yeah, this might be a new, exciting life for you, but when I come, you're different. And it's because only you and I can be ourselves with each other. It doesn't matter where we are, right? You might be this new, exciting person in this other place. So yeah, I think the story is very much about how you can love this person because of what he does, but also be hurt because he didn't understand your relationship or appreciate it, it feels like. He wanted to be a martyr and then he became one. And that's his legacy. His legacy is not that he was a great older brother. His legacy is
Yeah.
that he died for a cause.
Yeah. I think that the way that this unfolds really helps build that because of
Yeah.
its structure, I think. I mean, the beginning of it is anyone who knew the two of us would have known that there was never the remotest chance of the character stopping his brother, of Tom stopping James. James is older, my big brother. He was the one with power, the strong one. So we know that something is going to happen and that there's going to be recriminations or some sort of hint that Tom could have stopped it. And he's starting off the bat by saying, no, let me explain to you why that's not possible. And so we kind of enter into the story knowing that there's something between them or some kind of like their relationship is going to be the focus. Like, what is it between the two of them? Then after that, it dives into the story of James. He's went to the seminary and what's happening. But sprinkled throughout is like these contrasts where my brother did this and I'm like this. And like just moments of how their relationship is, what the relationship is like. The narrator says, I knew that the way people looked at him when he was in church, particularly after mass, when he stayed behind as the last were straggling out, was something I would never have. Awe was the only only word for it. I would never inspire awe. So he's drawing a contrast between the kind of person his brother is and the kind of person he is as he's describing this. And like it keeps building up on that. And also, as this is going through, we get a hint like James died on another continent. That's on the second page, right? And just these little things we know so early. You know, when he goes to join the World Health Organization in Geneva, it says he lived in Geneva until his death. These are all like little hints of that, what's been foreshadowed or set up in that first paragraph is like something about the relationship between them. Something's going to happen. It looks like James is going to die. Then we learn what happened, but it doesn't resolve any of that. We learned how he
Right.
died, but it doesn't resolve the kind of like what's going on between them. And the resolution is the ending. It's like this, I first thought of it as like a catharsis. It's like the character coming to this like conclusion, this like thought process about the whole thing, but it's more like just a resolution. I think he realizes my brother was a martyr to something, if only to his own idea of himself. And there's nothing I could do to help. I would have to live with that. That's the resolution of it. It's like he couldn't have done anything. And I thought the very, very, very end was the best part.
Yes.
He wants to explain. I think he loved me, but I could never have been of help to him because he would never have asked for help. And there is no one to whom I can say these words, an accident of both my life and his. And this, I think, is the saddest thing of all. And that's the resolution. That's like the end of it. But then there's a kicker. But if James heard me saying this, he would say, the saddest thing, it's not close to the saddest thing, but he would not have told me what the saddest things might be. That's like, I wrote kicker at the outside because that's just this like extra bit that just like hammers it.
Because that's James in a nutshell, right? He's
Yeah.
like, our relationship is not that important to the greater scheme of things. He's like, no, that's not the saddest thing. There's something
Yeah.
worse. And the brother's like, this is the saddest thing of my life. How can you not appreciate that? This is my reality. This is like how, you know, people can exist in the day-to-day and not cry when they see terrible things on the news. This is my reality, right? I can see like a million horrible things happening to strangers on the news every day and not have a reaction, but have devastating reactions throughout the day to anything deeply personal to me. And it's a survival instinct, right? That you don't let the greater things impact you, or else how would you get through life, you know? And James seems to have taken the other tack. Nothing in his personal life can devastate him because he's so consumed by everything else. Nothing is so bad for him because there's always something worse. And this worldview ends up hurting his brother,
Yeah.
devastating his brother. Yeah. So to your point, you're like, okay, so we know he dies. We know how he dies. We know there's nothing he could have done. None of it's the resolution. None of it's the end. None of it's the point of the story. This is like the kind of story and why I love stories that are told in hindsight. And I would argue, if this was true, I don't think it is, but if it were, it would be a story that you can only tell 20 years out, 30 years out, however long, at the very end, when you've thought it through. Because for you, as someone that's experienced it, the story is not the punchline of a joke. There's not some final sentence that you can say that would tell you everything you need to know and feel about everything I've known and felt over 30 years. There's no like definitive summarizing scene or statement. Like stories like this have to be told with this like level of complexity where they're circling and they seem to be going out of order. But really, this narrator seems to have full control of what it is he's trying to show you.
Yeah.
This first scene is of him going on a trip and how like these trips are always weird and how when they visited his brother, the trips were tense and his brother was trying to do something exciting. And then it's two, three pages later, he tells you that his brother liked fart jokes. So he doesn't start out by telling you that like this is a man of depth or contradictions or actually he was human. He tells you all of this like out of order sort of, but really it's if you were to think of like a parent or a figure that you've known your entire life for years and years and years and you had to make a list of memories for the benefit of a stranger, there would be certain ones that would rise to the top, right? And then there'd be certain other ones that you would tell later or think of later that seem just as important, but they're sort of supporting. People are not these monoliths of James was not just a martyr, you know, he was other things. And so how do I demonstrate that? Well, I have to tell you these things and they seem contradictory, not just because they're out of order and in the timeline, but because how does this all amount to this one person, you know? But point being that this feels like at first winding and confusing, but it's done like pretty masterfully, right? It's done in the exact order that we sort of need to hear it. And it's because this character probably experienced it in this way throughout his life. At any given point in time, he felt a different way about his brother. And it wasn't until the brother was gone and his whole life trajectory could be seen on the page and he had years to reflect that he could tell you which parts of it were important.
One thing though is that most of it, there are certain scenes that are pulled out of order, but most of it is in order. You get
Yeah.
that kind of like introductory thing that kind of sets up the ending, right? But then we jump back to just he's in the seminary, and then this is what happened after the seminary, and then like after that, this is what happened. The story, he came home randomly, and then he wound up going to Geneva, joining the World Health Organization, or something happened in between there. But it's not until after the kind of the event story, like the events of his life have been outlined in that way, like from seminary to dying in Africa. Then we learn how he died through another scene that happened after his death, where somebody told the narrator about it. And then the narrator has to step back from that and wrestle with, I keep calling him a narrator. I guess he has the name Tom, but I always thought of him as the narrator. So immediately after somebody's telling him, it was terrible, very terrible, James and the others, she goes through and explains how he died. And then the immediate paragraphs that follow that is just him trying to cope with it and stepping back. It's not in a scene. He's like, I didn't know what that could mean. What do you do with a story like my brother James's? How do you think of it or not think of it? And what do? You live your life. And then he's wrestling with that story. You try to forget the conversation you had with your brother when he explained why he chose to live as he did. Then we jump out of order into this conversation that kind of like leads us to the ending, where he's like, here's the conversation that kind of sums up our relationship. And that's the ending. I think the structure is just masterful.
Yeah, and like to your point, like it is chronological in the sense that these scenes are following James's life. What feels like out of order is the fact that if this were a true story, it's easier to like understand this. And if it's not, it's just like so well done. But it's out of order in the sense that this is not amounting to the character description that you anticipate. These things are contradicting each other as they happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like unmooring, right? On the one hand, we know that he's going to be a priest, but then he decides not to be a priest. And we learn that he eventually dies somewhere else. And then, you know, like we're learning, but like the thing about the fart joke. And then, like, it's just disorienting in the sense that it doesn't feel like you know the full James until he's dead. And then there's the scene, and they happen chronologically to your point, but there's the scene toward the end where he's telling his brother, do you want to know why I didn't do the ministry? And I'll tell you why. That happens out of order in the story because he's recounting it. So it's disorienting in that sense because we don't get the benefit of knowing at what point that happened. We have to learn it years later the way the narrator did, right? So the narrator could have told us that early on, and that would have maybe given us some understanding of James. We don't have that. He could have told us early on that James died this way, but he didn't. We had to discover it in real time, and that's what feels real and confusing.
We had to discover it when we were ready, because everything else, all the contradictions had to be set up before we can get that resolution.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
I don't know. I tried to look and see if this was like real, but Mary Gordon writes all kinds of stuff.
I don't get a sense it's real. It's just a really good story.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes it's hard when there's such specifics.
Yeah, good fiction uses specifics to give it that sense of reality. I've mentioned in a previous episode, but I remember a creative writing professor had those three questions, like, did it happen? No, it didn't happen because it's fiction. Could it happen? Meaning, does it seem realistic? Does it seem like something that could have happened in real life? And then the answer should be yes. Your story should give the reader the sense that, yes, this could have definitely happened. There's no reason in the story that says it wouldn't have happened. And then the other answer question is, should it happen, is relating to does it feel right? Does it feel like a true picture of what human beings are? But I think the could it happen part is where all that, like, kind of like you mentioned before a long time ago, and we bring it up every once in a while, that like theory and proof, like
Oh, yeah.
say something about a character and then you prove it with details. The details feel like the proof. And if your proof is good enough, people are going to start questioning, is this a true story?
Yeah.
Then you know you've done something good.
Right. So I'm trying to think what my takeaway is, except that maybe another way to look at it would be that not just that James is a unique character and that you should come up with unique characters, duh, but that this is a story about a unique character told by another character, right?
Yeah.
This is like an extended character essay in a sense. And it's only kind of like toward, it's with this framing, this setup at the beginning where he says, like, maybe I could have done something. And then sort of like only at the very end that we revisit this framing, which is like, now that you know all this, this is why I feel this way. But it's really like an extended character essay, like description, vignette, whatever, about this man told from someone else's perspective. It's really cool that way.
Similar to what we talked about in the last episode, with where you have two characters that are kind of at opposites or extremes away from each other, where the contrast between them kind of helps create the drama of the story that defines the tension between them, right? It is in their differences that the main theme, I guess, is highlighted or comes to life. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, he's talking about his brother's life this entire story. It's not until the end that he kind of like brings it back. But I imagine we all have a person in our lives who's been like a shadow or the puppeteer, you know, whatever it is that's impacting you like at every turn. And you can tell a story about them that's really about how they impacted you. But that's just a really interesting like framing.
Yeah. I mean, the framing is my takeaway.
Yeah.
The way that the first paragraph kind of, I keep wanting to use the word adumbrates, but it foreshadows everything. It sets up everything. And it's not like it sets up a thing and then saves it for the end, right? It sets up a thing that is intricately developed throughout. And one of the things I didn't mention earlier, but one of the things I really like about the way this unfolds in the beginning is it has that really short first paragraph breaks, and then it settles into like its pace. So when, as we're reading the next paragraph, like the first paragraph just sets things up and it like gives us questions to think about as we go forward. It's like, okay, this story is going to tackle these questions. That's our expectations. And like a good writer knows to like any questions they set up, they need to reassure us that those questions are going to be the focus and they will be answered eventually. I'll give you clues along the way. Here we go. But the pace at which it gets into that is established in that second paragraph. We're like, okay, this is going to be a long story. And it's going to be like one of those like where the details matter, where it's going to like live in the scenes and the rumination. I think that's really well done too. Like, I'm not saying it goes slow. It moves through it, but it's a contemplative story, and setting that up in the outset is part of what it does really well. But overall, that structure of setting something up at the beginning and then kind of developing it slowly throughout the whole thing so you can get to this resolution at the end that is really powerful.
Yeah, we just haven't done one like this. This is surprising.
It's good. Very, very, very good.
Yeah, so like we said, if you have a suggestion, send it in.
There are so many short stories.
I
That's
know.
the opposite of what we said before about our empty
Yeah.
buckets.
All right, thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.